Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today, we have an author interview with Nisha Sharma. Nisha's latest release, Legal Affair, is out today. This is a Brown Billionaire story, and it is so good. In this interview, Nisha shares her writing process, her latest book, and some awesome book recommendations. Now let's go to the interview. Hi, Nisha. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So happy to have you here. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I write young adult romance and adult contemporary romance. My first YA book came out in 2018 called My So-Called Bollywood Life. And I am currently writing a trilogy with Avon called The Singh Family Trilogy. The Takeover Effect was the first installment of the trilogy that came out last year. And the second book, The Legal Affair, comes out on August 18th.
I love it. And I read The Legal Affair and I read The Bollywood. So I'm excited to talk about this with you. So let's talk about what inspired you to become a writer?
So I think I've always kind of loved the concept of romance and love since I was a little kid. It's a lot of influence from Bollywood media, Bollywood movies, where Bollywood movies historically, or, you know, the modern contemporary Bollywood movies have always been about a couple that has been trying to get together, and they get together in the first half of the movie, and then the second half of the movie, some external forces are tearing them apart. That's, you know, the type of Bollywood movies that I grew up on. And I've always loved that story, that type of story. And I also used to read like Nancy Drew and Hardy Boy Super Mysteries, and I was obsessed with them. I wanted Nancy Drew to leave her boyfriend Ned so badly so she can get together with Frank Hardy, who would support her sleuthing passions. And I was like a hardcore fan. So that is, that is what I grew up on. That's what I loved.
I love it. Have you read some Nancy Drew or Hardy Boys now that you're grown up?
So I have read some of the like Nancy Drew, like mystery stories that they had recently published, and then they did some graphic novel stuff, but like I'm really a fan of the classics, and then the super mysteries which were the paperbacks that came out like in the 90s. Those are the ones I still love.
I love this. I love going back to our childhood and seeing those books and stories, and then like years later I'm like, it got me into reading. It got
evergreen.
They're evergreen content, so it's awesome. So what was your journey to get that first book published?
So I started writing professionally when I was 19. I joined Romance Writers of America at that time. I was taken under the wings of the other authors in the romance writing community. So I felt like I was in a really great place because I was nurtured and I was learning constantly. By the time I was in law school, I had some success with small presses, but I hadn't really found, my breakout quote in quotes, my breakout book. And it wasn't until I had started my MFA at Wilkes University, where I wrote My So-Called Bollywood Life, which was my YA that sold to Random House Children Books.
That's fantastic. So let's talk about writing. And this actually question came up when I interviewed Sarah McLean. She mentions your style. So what a preface. For longtime listeners, you may know what Nisha's style is, but Nisha, what's your writing style? Do you follow an outline? Do you see British or lead serial plotter? Are you a pantser?
I am not a pantser. I am a plotter. I am so a plotter. When I first think of an idea for the book, I sometimes will marinate on it for months. There has been a story that I've like sat on for 2 years before I actually started writing. The Singh Family Trilogy actually started with a thought like a couple of years ago before I got to the point where I actually started writing the first chapter of the first book. After like thinking about the story for, you know, an extended period of time, I will start the research process. So anything in the book that I don't have familiarity with, like personal knowledge, I will seek out experts. I'll do interviews, read case studies, read white papers. For my so-called Bollywood life, I actually learned how to splice film.
Oh my God.
Because the heroine splices film in that book. She knows how to splice 35 millimeter film. So I went to my local movie theater and I became really good friends with the manager, and he took me up into the projection room and he showed me, okay, this is like the table that you use, the lighting table that they use. This is how you like look at the film strips. This is how you splice the film. So I actually learned how to do it in order to actually write one paragraph in the entire book. And then, you know, for the Takeover Effect and the Singh Family Trilogy, I am a lawyer, so I have like experience in corporate law, but I didn't have a lot of experience in mergers and acquisitions. So I spoke to a lot of attorneys who are very well-known M&A attorneys. Mm-hmm. I was very lucky to have access to them. And, you know, I bought them copious amounts of Dunkin' Donuts and, you know, we drank coffee and we talked about, you know, what could potentially happen in a situation where there's a hostile takeover over a small company. And it was great. So I do all that. I then compile my research and I start with a story arc. I usually like to follow a linear story narrative, and I will draw a graph on very big paper or on a whiteboard. Or even, you know, sometimes I even use like PowerPoint or something, and I will start putting plot points on the graph. And so say we're using the hero's journey as a structure, I'll focus on developing those major plot points, mm-hmm. Those turning points. And then I will draft very extensive summaries of those turning points. I will then develop an Excel spreadsheet where I put my deadline, and I will plot out 2,000 words a chapter, which is roughly 10 pages. This is how many pages the book has to be. This is how many words the book has to be. This is how many words I have to write per week in order to hit my deadline a month early, because I will always take that extra month for revision. I will have my Excel spreadsheet. I will have my graph. I will have my summaries. I will develop a beat sheet that is like my cheat sheet. So if I'm like out in the world, which of course no one's out in the world right now, we're in a pandemic. But, if I would like write outside the house, I would take my beat sheet with me. I would also put everything into Plotter, which I have access to like on my app, like on my computer and everything. And that way I can, Plotter is an app for those of you who don't know. And it's Plotter. It's an app for your desktop. That the desktop version is way better than the phone. So if anyone is like looking at Plotter, I recommend the desktop app before I recommend the one on the phone. But anyway, I put it in Plotter, and I mean, I can go on. I have a very thorough process, and then I'll build all of those like details into an actual calendar. Mm-hmm. And so like events for the book will often coincide with like real life events. Mm-hmm. And I color code it, because like when I first started doing that and I didn't color code it, like there was, you know, something in my book that was like Bollywood movie night, and I'm like, what Bollywood movie night? I have no idea what's happening. And I realized that like, no, that's a Bollywood movie night that coincides with a date in my book, not in real life. So I like had to start learning how to color code my stuff. And so, you know, that's also something that exists. And so that's my very extensive, probably a little too detailed process.
I love this process so much. I love, it's like the method to the madness. Like, how do you put it all together and make sense of it? And it's like, yep, such a good feat. Like, you wrote a book. Like, you know.
But how I do it. But you know what? The thing with process is that everyone can have a different process. Mm-hmm. The end goal will eventually be the same. Like Sarah mm-hmm. McLean, I can tell you, and she's told you already, right?
Yeah.
She's told you that her process is not my process. I'm on one end of the spectrum and she's on the complete other end of the spectrum when it comes to processes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love it. I love asking this question because then I think about when I read the book, like, how does that make sense? Do they plot this or do they just wear their pants drawers, you know?
Yeah.
So it's awesome. Do you share work along the way or do you wait to complete it for others to read?
Oh, so I do share the work along the way. I share it with my best friend, who will read, like early chapters. I will share it with my critique partner. I will talk about it extensively with people, mm-hmm. That I trust and that, you know, are close to, like, you know, they know what I'm working on. I will talk about it to my agent. And I think that's part of the way that I process what's happening in the book and the way that I develop layers into the story.
I love this. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about the Singh Family Trilogy. What was the source of inspiration?
So I work in corporate. I work for a very large Fortune 10 company. In my workplace, or Fortune 15 company, in my workplace, you know, we have a team that works with smaller businesses. Mm-hmm. We have a team that works to invest in smaller businesses. And so I've been, you know, part of the process of connecting with these smaller businesses and the relationships that large businesses have with small businesses and small diverse businesses, companies that are owned and operated by families that, you know, their company represents the immigrant dream. So, you know, and their companies aren't always, you know, small. Their companies like are smaller than a Fortune 15, but, you know, they're pretty freaking successful. And it's amazing how someone who only has like $54 in their pocket can come from India and create an empire. It may not be a Google empire, but it's incredible. It's incredibly impressive. The company that they develop means so much more to them than, you know, like what, like my job would technically mean to, like, to me, it's a source of income. Mm-hmm. To them, their company is, you know, a symbol of the American dream. It's, you know, the reason why they wake up in the morning and they work as hard as they do. So that was part of the reason why I wanted to write something like this, because I felt like it was really important to write a family saga book where it was connected to a bit like a business, because I feel mm-hmm. like we see a lot of, you know, people of color represented in media, but we don't see a lot of them in executive leadership positions having mm-hmm. very successful lives. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to showcase that. The other thing is, there are so many CEOs in corporate America that are South Asian. And I never read a billionaire book with a South Asian hero. It's like, excuse me, every billionaire romance out there is like a white hero. And yes, there are a lot of white men in corporate America, more than anything else. Mm-hmm. But there are also a lot of South Asian, like a lot of South Asian billionaire, you know, CEOs too. Like we have Microsoft, we have like Google, we have like, you know, so like I can go on and on and on. The amount of, you know, powerful South Asian men in those kinds of positions, either past or present. Mm-hmm. And that is why I wanted to include a South Asian CEO, because it, and who had amassed that kind of accumulated that kind of wealth, because it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's, mm-hmm. it's a reality right now.
I love this. I love the fact that it was like, it was diverse and it was about family mm-hmm. and they came together and it was like, they're working together, trying to try to figure out, and you still had the family dynamics of the brothers, your disagreements and all different things, but at the end of the day, they believe in the business. They believe, like, you know, they created this empire mm-hmm. that's sustaining and that's helping not just them, but also all these people that you hire and they work mm-hmm. for. So I love that. So this book is on the world business, and you mentioned that you had some research about mergers and acquisition. Mm-hmm. So, and corporate espionage. So what was that research like? So you met with attorneys, did you meet with business people too?
I did. So I met with the M&A attorney who actually spearheaded the Yahoo merger with Verizon. So that was one attorney I met with. I met with a couple other M&A attorneys that did major, that have done major deals that have, you know, a really great reputation. I've also met with the business law professor at Rutgers University. Mm. I sat with him for a very long time. And we chatted back and forth about the different possibilities of, you know, if this X happens, will Y happen in a business setting? So they did a lot of like case studies with me, and that was very helpful. I spoke with a lot of female CEOs as well, who own their own businesses in the tech industry. And let me tell you, they are so impressive. I am just like, I am in love with every single one of them. There's one in particular, I won't say her name, or her company, but she does a lot of work with the government. Mm-hmm. She runs a tech company. She used to be a consultant, and then she just decided to hang up her own shingle. And, you know, we were talking and she's like, hold on, like, I got to put the baby in the car seat. So she's putting the baby in the car seat. And then like, I hear her turn on her car and the engine revs. I'm like, what are you driving? And she's like, oh, sorry. I'm in my Bentley today. I'm like, okay, sure. She's putting the baby in the backseat of her Bentley and then getting in the car to pick up the other one from daycare. Okay. I loved it. And then meanwhile, she's like talking like, you know, on her whatever, like her car speakers talking, and, you know, she's hands-free and she's, you know, chatting about like balance sheets and getting new clients and like purchasing other companies to grow her global footprint and developing diversity and inclusion initiatives because she is a person of color and she wants to impact the communities that she serves. So, I had amazing conversations with female leaders and I loved every minute of it. And I think that was one of my favorite parts of working on the legal affair.
I can imagine. I love this. I love the fact that you got inspired and then created a love story for a strong female character who has to found, who's basically set her world up in store and, you know, have some inspiration for those.
Definitely.
So let's talk about Raj. So Raj is, you know, basically she broke free from her family. She left, she went to college, you know, with basically kind of like a dream of just getting out of the family. She didn't want to get an arranged marriage or be pregnant. And so she got married, you know, with an agreement and then built a business and tried to like, then finds herself in a place in her life where pretty much everything that was normal is no longer normal. Like she's getting divorced. She's like, she's off for a job and all these different things. What was it important to showcase her character arc? Because she grows during this relationship.
Yeah, she does. I think it's really important to for the strong female character to kind of, come from a place where she feels like she is a fully sufficient, independent woman, and she remains that way throughout the whole story. Mm-hmm. But what changes is her views on strength itself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she is a strong female, independent woman, you know, strong independent woman. She can remain a strong, independent woman, but her strength doesn't necessarily mean that she can't, share the burden in a partnership with mm-hmm. someone else. She learned that through the journey of the book. I wrote Raj the way that I did, where she started off in a position where she was going to get a divorce because I felt compelled to tell a story, that normalizes divorce in the South Asian community. Mm-hmm. Like it's not a normalized thing. Okay. You know, there are a lot of people who still, you know, just they, a lot of people who don't believe that divorce should happen, you know, and I think that in the story itself, I didn't want to position a heroine who was faced with defending her choices. I wanted it to be like, okay, she's getting a divorce, you know, it makes sense, she's getting a divorce. And I didn't want the hero's reaction to her to be to like sexualize her or to, you know, question her choices, because it's important to me to show different perspectives of the South Asian narrative. Mm-hmm. So that's where kind of Raj is. And the fact that she doesn't want kids is also something that I wanted to put in the story, because that's not just South Asian, that's across mm-hmm. the board, where, you know, it's questioned whether or not women have the right to make the decision on whether or not they should have kids. They're always, you know, questioned about it. And so I wanted that to be in the book as well. Whether or not, you know, Raj decides to have kids later down the line, you know, the fact that she didn't want kids at that moment in the beginning of the book, even at the end of the book, you know, it was respected. And I think that was the key. Her decision was respected. So, you know, that I think that having those different elements to her that stayed constant through the story, but just her feelings towards like, okay, you know, I can be this way, I can have these feelings, and I can still be respected for it, and I can trust that someone else is going to you know, be the reliable partner I need while I continue to grow in my personal journey, and I can be a part of this pair that also is stronger together. I think that was the focus of her character arc.
Yeah, I really loved her character. I think I just loved the fact that she normalized certain things. Like for me, like not wanting to have kids was a very big thing, because I see a lot of romance where it's like, oh, and they have a baby. And it's like, but not everyone wants to have a baby. Like yeah. not everyone, you know, and that's everyone's, that's their personal choice. Mm-hmm. So I love that it normalizes certain things that I was just like, that I wish they really normal, you know.
Yeah,
and then at the same time we brought in, you know, a strong female character with a strong alpha hero too. So, and like, how do you actually make a relationship work with their equal partners, not just one over the other? Or mm-hmm. you know, there was a push and pull, but it was actually, it was part of the chemistry, like it worked together. So mm-hmm. speaking of the chemistry and speaking of the theme, like what was the process like to write those scenes?
So that's where I was kind of like, okay, you know, this takes time. I have to figure out a way to develop this, because mm-hmm. if you have a strong alpha heroine, does that mean you can't have an alpha hero? Mm-hmm. You know, that is like often the question that people ask themselves, like where, like what is possible in this situation? If you have two alphas, you know, is it going to work? Because, you know, oftentimes it doesn't on the page. It doesn't even in nature. Like you generally don't have it in nature. Mm-hmm. So could I write two alphas? And in a way, I think that I did. I think mm-hmm. that Raj is definitely an alpha, but Ajay is also very, very much an alpha. He is an alpha that is respective, like he respects Raj, mm-hmm. he respects her decisions, but he also does not like take shit from her. Mm-hmm. he's like, I'm calling you out, I know that you know you're lying because you're scared, mm-hmm. and I'm going to call you out on it, and I'm going to do whatever I can to kind of protect you. But if protecting you doesn't mean stepping in front of you, it means stepping up next to you and standing by your side. That's what I'll do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know, it was kind of like, was he more of a cinnamon roll or was he more of an alpha? Cinnamon roll, by the way, is trademarked by Andy Christopher. I'm going to go on record and say it. She's the one who came up with the term. I feel like she doesn't get enough credit for it. So yeah. I'm throwing that out there. Author Andy Christopher, she's amazing. Andy J. It's Andy, J. Christopher, I think, are on Instagram. But that is my little plug for Andy. So I don't know if Ajay is a cinnamon roll or an alpha, but I think I got most of the alpha on the page in the book. Like, that was my intention, and hopefully I executed it.
You did. I think as someone who's moved away from the alpha hero, I felt like AJ was respectful. Like, he had her back. Like, he was like, I'm rooting for you. Like, he wanted mm-hmm. a strong female in his life. And it wasn't like a sense of like, you know, I'm better than you are, or mm-hmm. I'm gonna complete you. Like, it was more like, we can come together, we can mm-hmm. work this out. So I really appreciate that, in the sense of like, you know, for someone who doesn't love her alpha heroes, this was mm-hmm. an alpha hero that I can root for. So what can we expect about book three?
So in book three, I haven't really thought about it yet, because I've had to, you know, kind of switch to a different swim lane on a different project. But I do want Zale's story with Sahar to be, you know, second chance romance, mm-hmm. because you don't really know much about his relationship with Sahar through books one and two. But you know that by the end of book two, you know, something happens. And mm-hmm. so, like, I'm excited to kind of explore their relationship in book three. I don't think it's a secret that Zale and Sahar are, like...
Well, I was expecting that was going to be book three. I was like, I feel like it's hinted a couple of times. I was like,
across, like, all of the stuff. It's, like, everywhere. Like, Zale and Sahar is definitely happening. But I just, I don't want to give too much away. But I will say that, like, you know, I'm in the preliminary phases of developing the story. And I'm excited to write it. So we'll see what happens.
I'm excited. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. This is our favorite show with the audience, what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
What my favorite genre? That's a really hard question to answer, because I read across genres. I read across, romance genres. I will say I do like a really good paranormal.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. And so what has been a book you read this past year that you love?
There's been so many. I don't know if I can narrow it down to one.
Okay.
So just I'm going to give you a top five. Can I give you a top five?
Yes.
Okay. You Had Me at Ola just came out. Alexis Daria, freaking phenomenal. So okay. good.
So good.
Adriana Herrera has come out with multiple books. I really loved American Sweethearts, but her book Here to Stay comes out this month. Also phenomenal. Sarah McLean's Daring and the Duke is the last in the Bare Knuckle Bastards series, and it's also just like, talk about like a knockout, and that's, I mean that literally and figuratively. The Devil of Downtown by Joanna Shoup, if you're also into historical, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, that is, like, I read that book and I was just floored. And then I texted Joanna and I was like, dude, this is unreal. I can keep going. Can I keep going?
Yeah, please.
Harvest of Sighs by Sierra Simone was also ridiculous. A Worthy Opponent was, and Harvest of Sighs and A Worthy Opponent by Katie Robert are both erotic romance. Mm-hmm. So I recommend those two. If you're looking for the most sweetest, slow burn, amazing contemporary, Love Letter came out in January of this year. I can't believe like it's still this year, but Kate Claiborne's Love Lettering was also really, really solid. It was so good. Blame It on the Billionaire, I think was the title, by Naima Simone. It was part of her like Blackout series. Let's just leave it at like Sexy Elevator Scene, which is like one of my favorites. Also really good. For YA, I read two YAs this year. I don't remember if Love Boat Taipei came out this year. I think it came out.
Yes, it did.
Love Boat Taipei like blew my mind. Mm-hmm. Like obsessed. The other one that's coming out on the same day as The Legal Affair by Pintip Dunn is I have the book Dating. Oh my god.
Dating.
Wait, I got it. I'm gonna look it up really quick. Pintip Dunn. I blurbed it. I and for some reason I can't even remember. Oh, Dating Makes Perfect. That's what it is. I blurbed the book and I was so excited about this book. I can't even tell you how much, like, Pintip just like wrote such an incredible story. It's like, oh, it is the romance, the YA romance, the type of YA romance that I find is like just perfect. It has all the right elements in it. It just makes you want to like hold hands and go to the movies and like, you know, kiss in the back row. It's just so good. So that's one. I mean, there are a lot more. I rec books on my blog on nisha-sharma.com. Every month I have like 5 books that I'll mention. So there's like other recs for sure that if you guys want to check it out, you can go there and see it.
I love all your recs. This was amazing. So tell us where you can find me online.
So you can find me online on Instagram and Twitter at Nisha Writes, NISHAWRITES. Same handle for both sites. On my website, nisha-sharma.com. That's where I have like information about events. I have information about, I have recipes on my blog. You can sign up for my newsletter there. I usually have a giveaway in my newsletter. I have a YouTube channel. I haven't posted a video in a little bit because I've been writing a lot, but it's Nisha Writes Online. So it's Nisha, WRITES online.
And that's it. Thank you, Nisha, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I had such a great time.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.